This week on a special episode of WebMD's Health Discovered podcast, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
It's a diagnosis that changes everything. So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
You can tell Tim was a political operative.
Sometimes you're just spitballing. South leak. False flag. South leak your own ta-ta photos.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. We had a big show to get to with lots of very important subjects.
It's a super-sized show.
It was so big, the green room was even quite large, but you can't hear that unless you're at the Bulwark Champagne tier, founders level.
So big that we have to open with something not important, but also tremendously satisfying at a psychological and spiritual level.
MDMA.
Before we get that, though, I've been nominated for a Webby Award.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't think the Webby Award is even a thing. Like, I don't, like, it's not a real, and yet for some reason, I want it so bad. I can't explain why. I'm like Tracy Jordan when, like, you know, a sweatshirt comes and it's earmarked for him and Jenna. And he's like, I want this. This is the greatest sweatshirt ever. I want
just at least, why don't you just let me do this for you? Okay. It would be so much better for you if you just let me pitch you as like you did for my book, right? You tell people to buy my, you don't need to do this yourself. We'll guys. Webbies are important for some reason related to the internet. Here's the thing about the Webbies. You voting, they are democratic. So if you're like me and you love JVL's triad in theory, or in practice, and you read it every day, like I do truly, go vote for JVL's to get a Webby.
Can I just say, if you're a Bulwark Plus member, that's a fine thing for you to do, is go vote for the stupid fucking Webby. I don't know what you would even do with a Webby once you got it. JVL needs this for some reason, and supporting your friend JVL is important. That's fine. If you're not a Bulwark Plus member, really kind of reading the triad would be superior to voting for the Webby. You know, going to thebulwark.com, signing up for the triad, becoming a paying member, consuming the content, reading it, feeling validated and fulfilled because JVL is very insightful and it's a smart newsletter every day. Like, for me, that would be highest. And then below that would be watching this show. And then below that would be voting for him on the Webby, quite a bit down.
I do want to warn everybody that should the people choose me, I will be getting a WWE style championship belt made for myself that says JVL, the people's champ, and has like whatever the little Webby logo is.
Thought this through.
Yes, okay. I sure as shit have. And I will, whenever we do a live show, I will carry this thing around and, like Conor McGregor style, I will enter the auditorium holding it above me. Yeah.
And it's like JVL. It's like, I have defeated TLDR by Wealth Simple Media and Litquidity by Onbox.org.
And whoever the premier finance newsletter of Canada is.
Don't let him get beaten by that. Just because we're all with Canada right now, emotionally, don't vote against JVL.
It's going to be me or Brian Stelter. And I'm sorry, I like Brian. He's a great guy. But
it's not a must-read newsletter, you know.
So let's get to the real candy. News broke an hour before we came on here, which is why we had to tear up the show map, that the Daily Mail is reporting that Christine Noem's husband, Brian, has been living a secret double life. He is into
bimbofication,
bimbo core. Christy Noem is putting out statements asking for prayers for her family and privacy. And I mean, there is so much going on here, but I think we should start by saying one of our rules on TNL is no kink shaming.
No kink shaming.
No kink shaming.
I just want to start here.
We support.
Okay. Some people are into bimbofication. Some people are into pinball. All right.
If you want to bimbofify yourself, if you're listening to this and you're a bimbofier and you just want to like have gigantic cans filled with something, I don't know, whatever you fill it with, silicone, fake silicone.
Saline would be my guess.
Saline, if you're going to have gigantic saline cans, and if you want to talk to people on the internet and do other things, I support you. That's fine. I will not, though, be offering either prayers or privacy to Christina. Okay, I just want to be abundantly clear about that. I will not pray for her, and I will not offer her privacy because she does not merit either.
It's Holy Week.
I don't care.
Jesus died for people like Christy Noem, too.
She doesn't merit either, okay? I'm sorry. If we're going to pray for anyone in the Christy Noem universe, I'll pray for Corey Lewandowski's children, her paramour. His children probably deserve our prayers. I will pray for the people that she has in gulags and detention centers all across the country, yeah. The people that her agents killed. Alex Freddy and Renee Good and others and their families, we can pray for them. I don't think that we need to pray for Christy Noem because her husband likes to bimbofy himself and put on Barbie Girl by Aqua and put on massive jugs and talk to other ladies on the internet. That is a personal issue for them. That is fine. And that would have stayed a personal issue for them if Christy Noem had not decided that she wanted to be Donald Trump's henchwoman in a mass deportation campaign and fly around the country doing a pinup girl shtick in front of prisoners, doing snuff films in front of prisoners in gulags and doing cowboy hat videos with my tax dollars where she like pranced around the countryside in a massive cowboy hat on a horse with a new face and like talked about how important it was that we menace people who tried to come to this country to find freedom. And that's why people are talking about her husband's bimbofication. She had chosen not to do that. She could have had privacy and they could have done whatever they damn well pleased. I don't know. Maybe they like to bimbofy together. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. She seems to have other interests. Stank breath, Corey Lewandowski, but you know, to each their own.
Sarah, so we've had our fun. Let's talk about the serious aspects of this.
Sarah might want to have fun too.
I didn't get to have my fun
No,
yet.
You wait. Look, the Shield of the Americas organization is going to be rocked by this. Yes. And I'd like for you to unpack what this is going to mean for the Shield of Americas and how it's going to work.
Well, since the Shield of Americas is such a longstanding institution in the United States and for it to, I don't know how
in the
it will overcome.
At all.
That's
region.
Right.
In the Americas.
Hold on a second. I want to.
Both of them.
Tim took mine, but I'm going to took my take a little bit because what my take was is I actually think this is deeply unfair. Like the idea that of the two gnomes, the husband, Brian, is the one who's going to end up feeling Brian, Byron.
Brian.
That's what I say.
Brian.
Oh, it's Brian.
It's spelled Brian. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't know the pronunciation of his name. I'm sorry.
That's fine. He wants privacy.
This is a real Ghislaine moment when I feel like for people of ill repute, I do not need to worry about their names. But I, of the two gnomes, the fact that he is going to be the one to endure shame about this because he likes to put balloons in his shirt and chat with other women, I do resent having to have spent the last 30 minutes trying to understand what bimboification is as a distinct kink.
Is it not a big thing in your community?
No, I don't
obviously
know.
Obviously it isn't.
I don't.
Come on. Of course it
is. It could be. I don't know.
Not a big thing. It could be a small thing somewhere in the community. But I think the whole point of being a lesbian is to get away from men who are into bimbofication.
Our kinks are Subarus, softball.
Camping.
Home Depot.
Chopping wood.
Yeah. Like gay men are handsy. Lesbians are handy. You know? Yeah. So no, not a big thing in my community. I didn't understand this. Oh, I had to look it up. But this is, so what he is doing is, because the pictures in the Daily Mail are of balloons, no. I think. Like, he has put balloons under his shirt very usefully using the little blow-up parts, you know, where you tie the knot off at the end to replicate parts of the female anatomy. But they're supersized. And I think the point is that you chat with other people who, other women, he's chatting with other women who also have enormous...
Jessica Rabbit size.
What about the tight shorts, though? What about the really
Also the shorts. But the thing is again, okay. So, but I don't think that he has to feel, he should feel nowhere in the same neighborhood of shame. The idea that this would be the thing that Kristi Noem feels shame about is wrong. Yeah, what's your hand?
Counterpoint. He could have stopped all this. Imagine after the first deportation to Sukkot, if he had leaked his bimbo-fied chats with ladies on the internet to the Daily Mail back then. Do you think Donald Trump could have...
Or he could have just spoken up about the deportations being wrong. I'm not sure he needed to put those photos out in order to stop the deportations.
And divorced her and got...
He could have said, Renee Good is not a domestic terrorist.
I would have gladly had Brian on the Bulwark podcast discuss his negative feelings about his wife's both behavior with Corey Lewandowski, but more importantly, her behavior towards people in this country whose rights were trampled on. He could have done that. He sat behind her at her hearings. I'm sorry. I don't mean to like really. Yeah. It's not his fault per se, but like he did have outs here. There were outs. You're not required to.
Hold on a second. Okay, this is true of every MAGA adjacent spouse. Right. Yeah. Like, I mean,
it's true of
right
Usha. Now, an Usha segment coming up.
I think, right. It's too. True of Usha. It's true of Melania. It is true. I mean, it's true of all of these people who are, it's whoever Pam Bondi's husband is. Someone check his chat history.
It's true of Lindsey Graham's bubble wand.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
We can do all of that. But actually just think for a second, perhaps this kink has developed because he lives with a lot of chronic shame around what his wife does, enabling his wife, like that is some kind of psychological, I don't know any of it, but it does explain a little bit of the Corey Lewandowski thing. Like, I think there's been a longstanding sort of like, okay, it's an open secret, not even, she couldn't even answer it in front of, I mean, she was asked about it in front of a congressional panel, her relationship with Corey Lewandowski, and she declined to answer it. And this explains why, that there's... Actually, we can leave it at that. I think this potentially explains why. And anyway,
what? Which part of it explains why? What in particular?
Well, it just sounds like perhaps it's a complicated. Listen, let me say this.
How much? Yeah.
People should be able to do what they want, and if that's the idea. Position. Yeah, I know. I'm not. What he is doing seems completely harmless. As a matter of personal preference, where these things get complicated is in the following ways. One is hypocrisy, right? It is a classic ploy, it is a classic phenomenon to have the people who are the most outspoken moral scolds of everybody else turn around to be the ones who have, you know, in their closets some weird stuff. Right? That's number one. Number two is, did it jeopardize national security? Right? So she is, our own Will Salatin put this in the chat, but like, she wasn't doing a good job of defending her own homeland. But he became a national security risk for her, right? This became a problem. And then there's the third thing of like, what's being done on taxpayers' dime. Like, it's always a different matter about what taxpayers are paying for. Like, I don't care about what politicians do. I care about how they use taxpayer funds, though. I care about if they are lying to the American people or putting us in a national security risk. Those are different than just the personal foibles and of the fallen man of which everybody is.
I want to be very clear. I think it is the choices that Kristi Noem and Brian have made with their life that merit the mockery and derision. If Volodymyr Zelensky or Oprah's husband or, you know, I don't know, the No Kings people turned out to be into bimbofication, I would be going to the mattresses to defend their right to put on fake boobies, as just as I do for Brian. The point is that, like, this was all she was a menace. She was in a cabinet of some of the worst people in America. She stood out heads and shoulders above the rest as the worst. She sent people to a foreign gulag based on their tattoos and then went down and took a picture in front of them like she was a pinup model. Like, this whole time, her husband, like, is at home barbifying himself. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you've made that choice now. Like, you've decided that you want to be the henchman and that she's the henchwoman and you're the husband for the henchwoman for Donald Trump. I just, like, sometimes people are like, well, you know, people deserve privacy and if they're in a public life. And it's like, yeah, people deserve privacy in public life. Like, I don't, you know, if there's not any hypocrisy at play, if they're not harming anybody, I don't see why it would be fair to take a public person who's doing a nice thing, you know, to talk about their spouse's masturbatory habits. I don't think that would make any sense, but like, that's not what we're talking about here. She's like the worst, one of the worst people in the country, doing untold damage to people. So, like, yeah, you signed up for that. And if you signed up for that while you're bimboifying yourself, then that you're putting yourself at risk, I think, for people to discuss your bimboification.
One prurient question. Okay. We're allowed one.
Okay, sure.
Who's behind the story? So
this is a good question.
Our old buddy Mark Caputo tweeted that he had been approached by a woman who was an undocumented immigrant. Possibly. Hard for me to really follow Mark's tweet on this, but it is basically saying shopping the story to him from one of the women who is exchanging messages with Brian. I'm prepared to believe that, I guess, but I mean, it seems more likely to me that either Corey or Christy is behind this, because we are like 3 weeks after her ouster, and you get the sense like now they can YOLO. Right. Where I just find it hard to believe, like, really, like, it, this coincidentally breaks right now that she no longer has to do the pretend marriage thing.
So here's the thing. You can just get divorced without the pictures being leaked.
You can do that. You can get divorced multiple times, even just ask the president.
Yeah. You don't have to, if you're Christy Noem, why do this?
Especially when he's been so loyal.
I mean, he has, right? He, I mean,
I don't see why Christy would be mad at him. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but
like, I mean, was Lindsay Bluth ever really mad at Tobias?
No, but this is embarrassing for her, right? Like, whoever is doing this wants them, like, would do it to hurt her, I think. That being said, Corey Lewandowski is an inveterate leaker. Like, this is a guy who knows how to go around and play stories to try to get what he wants. And he left DHS when she did and wants to be with her. So maybe this is just a way to get him out of the, I don't know, man, tawdry stuff.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Caputo post, she said it was somebody that was an immigrant. And I guess, according to the Daily Mail story, Brian was discussing his wife with the women during the chats.
Well, this is why it was a national security risk.
Yeah, so, like, it's not crazy that one of them decided to leak this because they have a personal immigrant story.
Possible.
A lot of people with personal immigrant stories. I do think that that's possible. You got to be careful.
All right, let's move on to more serious matters. We have a war in Iran. Over the weekend, we had an AWACS being destroyed, an incredibly valuable airplane, even though it doesn't have any bombs or lasers on it. I know this is very difficult for Donald Trump to understand. And while the war was continuing to go south, one of its greatest proponents, Senator Lindsey Graham, the hawkest of all the hawks, he hunkered down and went to Disney World.
Yeah, he's celebrating.
He was pictured here with a bubble wand.
Little Mermaid bubble wand.
Does he have grandkids? Children?
No.
I didn't think so.
No. I had a friend who happened to be at Disney World that day. And he was, it was kind of a big entree. He was alone in the photos, mm-hmm. but there was a lot of SUVs getting VIP treatment, being driven from thing to thing. So I assume, my guess is, people are saying that it's a friend and their children. But again, that's like super strange. I mean, Lindsay doesn't really seem to be the kind of guy that has, like, the idea that this is like a close friend from high school or something, and their grand, it's hard to see that. What this reads to me is like, this is a favor, right? It's a donor who has kids, donor friend, and so now they get the VIP Disney World treatment, get to go around, not wait in the lines.
Are you saying, Tim, that Lindsay is there as a favor to his donor, or that the donor is doing a favor for Lindsay
so that he can be near Peter Pan?
What donor says, you know what I really want, Lindsay, before I give you any money? It's for you to accompany me and my family to Disneyland.
My kid really wants to meet Cinderella, but more than anything, she wants to meet the author of the Iran War.
It's a lot of weird people out there in the world, and the whole situation's weird. You know, he's on Space Mountain. Like, the government, DHS is shut down.
Is this a problem for Lindsay? Like, I guess the answer is, of course not. We live in a world without any shame ever anymore.
Right? I think this is only a problem insofar as the reason it is an issue is that people see him right now as a big part of the architecture of this little adventure that we're on in Iran.
Our lovely stay.
Yeah, well, it's like Ted Cruz in the middle of one of the worst storms coming his way. He decided to hop a plane for spring break. It's like that, where people are like, is this not serious to you? Are you not, does it not matter to you that we are in the middle of a war? If you're going to architect this thing, maybe go sit in a chair somewhere and do big kid work, not go and get a bubble wand at Disneyland. Like, that doesn't feel like a serious thing to do in this moment when Americans are dying overseas for something that you clearly were in the president's ear that he ought to do.
It's a kind of a bucket list thing, though. You got to go around, you got to see all the evil queens, meet Woody.
And we said, no kink shaming. We said at the top, no kink shaming. This is what Lindsay's got to do.
I'd be concerned about some of what's happened in the evenings.
Okay. You know, at the special club, there's a super secret Disney club. I'm forgetting the name of it. The something 12 club, the 312 club, 512 club, 712 club, something like that.
I don't know anything about
that. Maybe
why does JVL know more about like weird gay stuff than we do?
Is that gay? Is it a gay thing?
Oh, no, sorry. I thought that's where Disney you were going.
Thing. No. It is like the incredibly exclusive. It's like a country club, but just for Disney. And so to get into this thing, you're on a waiting list for years and years and years. And it's like $100,000 dues and stuff.
I do think that like a lot of the characters in the costumes are gay. You know, the Peter Pan, the Woody.
Well, maybe.
Pluto.
I don't know. Who can say? Pluto? You know, Goofy. That dude's gay. Where are we on invasion of Iran? Because I feel like the odds
are
dropping.
Horrible. Oh, you mean where we put U.S. troops?
Actual ground troops in Iran. I feel like we are now at a point where over the last 48 hours, the administration is sending signal after signal that it is done. And so what we have had, again, 48 hours, we've had Trump saying that he's having great productive talks with the brand new regime, which is very smart and very serious and really working well with him.
Also a secret.
It's also a secret. He has said that the only thing they have to do straighten out is getting the strait opened up. Then he has said, you know, actually, we could be done even without opening the strait. The truth is that could be somebody else's problem. I mean, really, the people who use the strait are the ones who should sort that out. And so it sounds like he has established that there was victory, that there was regime change, and that the new guy is better. And also that we don't even forget returning to pre-war status quo. We don't even need to do that. He's out.
But also we might bomb the heck out of them and destroy all their infrastructure.
Well, sure. We might have to do some war crimes.
Yeah. I disagree. Okay. I don't know.
On what? What part are you disagreeing with?
Of JVL saying that, like, think the odds have necessarily gone down. Trump is all over the place. Like, all weekend, it seemed like, you know, that he was posting about how Trump, he hasn't lost his resolve. He's posting Mark Thiessen warmongering columns. I think back to that Polymarket bet. Talked about how the troop, there were not going to be troops in before March 31st, which is today, and not after. I forget, it was some May date. So potentially somebody with inside information made a big bet about how troops would not go in the ground until April, but they would go in the ground in April. They bombed Ishtahan last night, massive bombing raid. And like that was the thing that Mark Levin was talking about. We are not going to send troops in on the straight. We're going to send it into Ishtahan. So they could have been laying the groundwork for it there. I don't know that he knows. Like the UAE, and this is the other important thing. Like he's living minute to minute. He's like a fly. Like he doesn't have a grand strategy, ability to abstract. And so, you know, today the Gulf countries, I was kind of surprised by this news story. It was that, because I would have thought that the Gulf countries were getting wet feet because they're getting annihilated. I think they're kind of like, okay, in for a penny, in for a pound at this point. Let's try to get a better regime in there. And so UAE, Qatar, I believe Bahrain, we're calling him, telling him to do it. You know, BB wants to keep doing it. You know, MBS wants to keep doing it. And you know that it benefits him in calming the markets to like to give lip service to de-escalation.
Right.
So all this to say, like, I'm not like predicting we're definitely sending lots of troops in tomorrow, but I think that the messages are pretty conflicting, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically impossible to have a read on this situation because we can't trust our own government is telling us the truth about what's going on. And so, like, my best guess is that all the uncertainty about timelines, ground troops, negotiations is just to, like, make everyone confused to the point that Trump feels like all the options remain open to him because nothing seems to follow from the previous decision, right? You can say, like, I'm negotiating the end of the war. It'll be over soon. And then if you decide you're bored, you'll just end it, regardless of if you accomplish anything. But then you're going to go in and take the oil, but you need ground troops for cover. Like, all of it is just, none of it is linear. He's doing it on his janky personal social media thing, which, again, I just cannot get over. How do historians even think about the way this war is waged and how we thought through what our options are. Like the American people, is it about confusing us? Is it like actually thoughtfully about confusing us? Or is this just the way Trump handles things, right? Which is I'm going to keep all my options open by saying all the things. Like he likes to take all the positions oftentimes.
He's the chaos president. This is right. Jeb was right.
He was. Jeb was right about that. We've been right about a lot of things lately. I do think I was talking to Lovett about this a little bit today on the Daily Pod. And I do think it's pretty interesting that like this is in kind of a microcosm, the unique problems with Trump himself, as opposed to right wing populism and as an ideology, which has its own set of problems. But I think that just like the management of this is atrocious. It's like chaotic. It's fucking people over. It's haphazard. It's not thinking about possible consequences. It's corrupt. There's layer of corruption involved, whether it be the insider trading or the money going around through the Gulf. Like a lot of that is Trump stuff in particular. And I think like it's interesting in that like he has managed to anger our like every one of our European allies except for Hungary.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? It casts the whole gamut of ideologies. You know, like the right-wing populace, supposedly the MAGA gal in Italy, Milani, was this morning, was just like, I don't want any part of this. You can't land your planes here. Italy, we're out. The left-wing populace in Spain is like, we're out. The pragmatic centrists in France and UK, like Macron and Starmer, are like, no, this is crazy. We're out. Like it really is kind of a microcosm of like the chaos and insanity of Trump in singular, like it's a singular Trump issue problem, which we would say is like the home of Trump derangement syndrome here on the Bulwark. But it seems like this case is a good case study, I guess would be the way to put it. This is a good case study of our theory.
Secretary of Defense today was asked whether or not the United States was honor its NATO treaty obligations. And first time I can ever recall a Secretary of Defense getting asked a question like that. Or answering the question with, I don't know. You got to talk to the president. He decides that. But, you know, these allies, people aren't there for you. Why should you be there for them?
He seemed more subdued today, don't you think? A little less cocksure of all the war fighting we're doing.
The weird thing he was doing where he's like, I went to the region. I met with the guy that had a mustache the size of Texas. And I saw the lethality of our people. And
I thought facial hair was bad.
I know. I met a young woman who had a sly smile who told me bigger bombs, sir. It was just like, I don't know. He was. I think felt like he was trying to do like a cinematic and to reposition this from being war fighting and killing to some kind of, you know, cinematic statement of purpose, of American purpose and resolve. I don't know. It didn't land for me. It's the whole thing is crazy.
It seems insane. And I guess maybe this is just me getting torqued up over figure skating judge stuff, but is it going to be acceptable for the rest of our lives for the presidents and secretaries of defense and secretaries of state to say, no, we're going to sound like nonsense all the time because that is strategic ambiguity we're creating. And don't you understand that it's art of the deal? And of course, we would never signal to anybody what our true intentions are, and because that is not how the American government has generally been run over the course of, recent history. Typically, we feel like the leadership has an obligation to tell us what they actually think, more or less, or to not comment if they don't want to tell us, and not to be like, yeah, look at us. See, it's madman theory. It's all because if that's the world we're going to live in, like, why even bother? Right? Like, the idea is, well, the government just gets to say whatever it wants, and we all have to pretend that it's smart for it to say whatever it wants, and that, in fact, it's good for it to do that. And any president who ever actually said what our objectives were before in a conflict, that guy was a sucker. Okay.
I mean, we don't have to say that. I mean, I think that the hopefully that the way out of this is for people to see it and reject it as a way of doing things. Now, we could have a long debate that I don't think we need to have on this particular program about the likelihood of that. I do think, though, that Trump's numbers falling as close to precipitously as we've ever seen, like they are coming down in meaningful ways, indicates that the majority of Americans are unhappy with this move and unhappy with the way that it's being handled. Now, does that mean that they care so much about the fact that it is being communicated through the president's own social media? Like, I do think about this a lot, about how do we go back to a place where the White House's Twitter account isn't putting out slop all day long, where the Department of Homeland Security isn't putting out weird racist memes constantly, and AI-generated garbage? Is that a phenomenon unique to Trump, or will other people pick this up as we go? And I don't think we know yet.
I have an idea, which is I would like to find something beneath the W line, beneath the water table line, something so deep that is a total repudiation of all this.
Yes.
And I think that is the way to resolve all
this. Of course.
Listeners to the show, I apologize for this. I know I'm supposed to be giving you clear-eyed analysis, but I'm just vacillating wildly between, like, this is going so poorly that some days I look at that and my analysis is, I think that this thing is going to unravel beyond his ability to control it. Like, and I really do. And I don't want to be the guy that's like, the walls are closing in on him because whatever, he survived so many times before. But I'm like, this might really be the one, because it feels like he's lost the rope on the economy and lost the rope on the geopolitics of it. And if really we come out of this place where Iran has a toll booth on the Strait of Hormuz, which seems kind of like the median outcome right now. Would you say that that's right, JVL? Like, the mean outcome right now is that we quit and Iran has some sort of control over the Strait of Hormuz, where they get even more money than they were getting before?
I mean, they have proven that they control the Strait.
Right.
And so they are going to use that very real and provable leverage in some way. I don't think it's likely to be a toll booth.
I don't mean it literally a toll booth, but they'll extract finances out of it. Anyway,
they're going to extract better deals for themselves with everybody around them.
So, like, that's where this thing ends, is something in recession territory, global energy crisis, like allies pissed at us, Trump focusing on his new ballroom. I think that, you know, the wheels could totally fall off. And the repudiation of the way that he does business will be like, nobody wants to do that anymore. I mean, look at W. The reason why Sarah references that the Bush line is that, like, W wasn't invited to the 2008 convention. Like, that's how bad it was. W left and he was like not even invited to the next convention. So there are very big differences between W and Trump and all that. But like, if he gets to a place where like even people within the party decide next time that if things are so bad that to have any chance you need to run by repudiating him, then they'll repute. Then part of that will be doing business in a different manner. So that on my good mornings, that's where I fall. On my bad mornings, I fall at this thing is such a catastrophe for him that he's like a dog in a corner and he's going to do the most dangerous shit you can possibly imagine for the next 2 years. And who knows if we survive it. So that's kind of where I'm. That's where I'm.
0.01% chance that the next Republican nominee has to repudiate Trump and Trump doesn't go to the convention unless he's dead.
Right. Unless he's dead. Right. 0% chance because he would sabotage it.
Yes.
Right.
And also because some part of like there was not a big constituency within the Republican Party that was like still two fists in on George W. Bush.
No.
There will be a huge constituency. Maybe it'll only be 40% of the Republican Party. Maybe it'll only be 30. But people who are ride or die with Trump, no matter what, because it's a lifestyle brand, and you will not be able to like say no to that.
So I do think we should hold out some possibility for the fact that the Trump brand is garbage by the end of his term. Like the reason that I talk about the Bush line and frankly, the entire premise of my book is about how do you, in this weird new communications environment, go on offense against this guy so that you push him to a place where, like Tim says, he's far below the Bush line and it becomes an American experiment that nobody wants to repeat. Like, because that is actually the only way out of it. Like, my book is filled with how you cannot treat this just like a midterm election. It is not just about 2028. It is about a thorough repudiation of Trump. And in fact, 2020 needed to be a thorough repudiation of Trump. And when it wasn't big enough, that's what allowed him to come back. And I got to say, it is shocking to me. I was like, you know, I thought so much of how you'd get Trump down below 32% was going to really require Democrats on offense. And I still think that. I still think offense and rethinking a lot of some policy things, a lot of communication things is how you do a root and branch operation on Trump. But Trump's doing a lot of this himself. Like, I'm not sure we could have imagined that Trump would both wreck the economy and take us to war. Those are the makings. Like, yeah. I'm not sure you could pick a more realistic opportunity to push him down below 30% into a place where people are like, this was a failed experiment. I mean, and people are embarrassed.
Really? We should go back and look at like whatever the TNL was from 5 weeks ago. And it's like, what were we even talking about?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, maybe Homan replacing little Greg Bovino was like the thing to talk about.
If this doesn't push him below 32%, maybe he can't go there. I mean, that's a question, right?
Give it time.
But give it time here.
He's going to taco. He'll get out of this and he'll walk away and the economy will be worse than it was, but it will gradually improve. And so
it's going to gradually get worse before it gradually improves.
Though. Right. But sure. But it will at some point gradually improve. And he will then point to the gradual improvements as, see, I fixed that thing I broke, even though it isn't all the way fixed. And, you know, like his approval will go back to like 38%.
I don't know. It's 40%. Tough, man. That's fine. Maybe that's true, JVL. But if you can, again, if we don't even need a time machine like from Back to the Future. We just need like a little time blip. Like if we were able to go talk to 5 weeks ago ourselves and be like, in five TNLs, you will sit here and Laura Ingraham will be filleting Trump on Fox News primetime and really more filleting the people around him and being like, how has this gone so bad that everyone's failed Trump? And that Megyn Kelly would be going hard at Trump and that Tucker would and that Vance would be in hiding and that like they can't, I think that there'd be members of Congress speaking out. I think we'd be like, really? Like what happened? Like how did that happen so quickly? Like it did. It's pretty notable like how much damage he's done in 5 weeks.
And listen, I just, when you take the, look, gas prices, tariffs, Epstein, a war we can't seem to get out of. Like, inflation high, stagflation potentially coming.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
there are no good spots on the map.
No. Yeah. And he doesn't have a story to tell either. Yeah. Like, that's the other thing. Like even the State of the Union, the story was all backwards looking. Like, yeah, there's no positive, like, hey, here's this thing, you know, we're planning on a new Tax Cut and Jobs Act. I mean, the one bill that they want to pass this year is to try to cheat in the elections and screw with trans youth. Like, that's where they're at. They're like, we need a trans sports bill and we need to cheat in the elections. Like, that's my priority for 2026. I know things are bad for you right now, but we'll get things on track if we can just cheat in the elections and make sure that that one boxer is not in the next Olympics, because it was unclear if they were a hermaphrodite or not. That's what we're going to do.
I do think we should send ICE to Iran. Like, this is my solution.
Dark.
Why?
That is JVL level radical.
Why are they at the airports? I think if these guys are so tough, I think that if we need troops to go to Iran, we need people to go defend the homeland. You know, Kristi Noem, her husband, Corey Lewandowski, and ICE can all go and fight this war.
On the shores of the strait.
Yeah.
They know how to defend a border.
That's right.
Sarah, here's the difference between you and I. I go out and I stake maximalist positions, and you feel like you are besieged because you have to defend the reasonable course. When you do the maximalist stuff, I love it.
That's right.
All right. This show is brought to you by Brodo. If your morning coffee isn't cutting it lately, what if instead you reached for a steaming cup of something nourishing? Bone broth. This podcast is sponsored by Brodo. Welcome to the hottest trend in nutrition for the last 2,000 years, bone broth. Brodo's bone broths are made from scratch, no concentrates, preservatives, or shortcuts. You get the best broth money can buy. Brodo makes bone broths that are delicious enough to drink. Each cup delivers whole food protein, about 10 grams per serving, along with collagen-building amino acids, electrolytes, and nutrients to support gut health, immunity, joints, skin, and general wellness. All under 50 calories with zero sugar or fat. But is broth actually good for you, or is it all hype? A 2025 study found that amino acids in broth heal leaky guts and strengthen the immune system. In other words, there's real science behind grandma telling you to drink broth when you're sick. Brodo was launched by award-winning chef Marco Canora. He started selling Brodo out the side door of his East Village Manhattan restaurant 11 years ago, and now, whether you want a quick warm drink or a nourishing base for cooking, Brodo makes it easy. They ship nationwide, so you don't have to be here with me in New York City to enjoy Chef Marco's masterpiece. This isn't just a food trend or some fad that pro athletes say gives them an edge. It's a seriously delicious way to do something that's good for your body. Shop the best broth on the planet with Brodo. Head to brodo.com/thenextlevel for 20% off your first subscription order, and use code THENEXTLEVEL for an additional $10 off. Once again, that's brodo.com/thenextlevel for 20% off your first subscription order and an additional $10 off if you use my promo code THENEXTLEVEL.
Can I just say, for me, it's not coffee or bone broth, it's coffee and, because Tyler's making me some great cold brew every morning, but I'm bone brothing on top of that. I started laughing during the ad, and I do just want to be clear that I was not laughing about your ad read. I was reflecting upon the first segment of the show and how I suggested that Brian like needed to leak his own bimbofication photos as like a penance for his wife's behavior, and Sarah being like, well, maybe he could have just opposed what she was doing and spoken out about it. And I do think upon reflection that Sarah's suggestion was probably more reasonable.
Yeah.
Until Tim was a political operative.
Sometimes you're just spitballing.
Self-leak,
false flag, self-leak your own Tata photos.
Okay. All right. So this weekend we had CPAC and No Kings. The New York Times had a big piece about how the kids are thinking CPAC isn't cool anymore and that MAGA may be dead. And there were the protests, which seem to have, I forget what the number estimates are. I think that it's like 8.something million people, which is
more than we're at CPAC.
More than we're at CPAC, somewhat more than we're at the October No Kings protest. not a step change the way October was from June, but it didn't go backwards, which was my fear. Anyway, I was just curious what you guys make of this. Is it too much to, like, I don't know. I went to my No Kings. I thought it was lovely. I was really very buoyed. There were so many people who were there, older people.
Is it a diner? Is it like the local Bada Bing?
It was a park next to a library. Yeah. And I couldn't tell you how many people were there because I had to host our live show. So I was only there for like the first 30 minutes. And when I left, there were about 1,000 people there and people were still streaming in. So I don't know how big it got. But there were a lot of older folks there with like walkers and the little, you know, four-wheel walkers that have a seat built into them. It was 30 degrees outside. And I was like really in a deep, genuine way touched that these folks, again, they're not doing it for themselves, they're doing it for their grandchildren, were like, no, I'm going to go out and I'm going to be there and I'm going to be cold and I know that I'll have to park far away and get myself down the street to it. But I'm going to do this because it's important. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I also went to mine and it was also incredibly lovely. I do hope in other parts of the No Kings that there was a younger crowd, because as much as I was struck by the age where I was.
That wasn't the whole part of the protest I was at. There were a lot of young people, too. I'm just saying that that cohort of people really jumped out at me for.
Yeah, it got me thinking about sort of protesting in general and the fact that when it comes to No Kings, I do think that the median age has been much higher. Certainly the people I see out kind of every day are people who are older. And it strikes me that it's because they have a much deeper sense of life before Trump, right? Like they have this much, right? Yeah. As opposed to younger people who now have grown up with it. So like, because I keep saying like, why?
It's kind of like protesting homework. You know, it's like, this has sucked my whole life. You know, I'm not going to do a there's a little bit of that. Maybe that's not the best metaphor, but you see what I mean. Like, it's
I
just,
do. Yeah. But then I think about the college campuses and how everybody was protesting Palestine, the treatment of Palestinians. And I wonder why no one's protesting now, even like, where are the college protests about what's happening right now? Like, I'm sort of surprised you don't see that from people just as I don't, maybe other people have an answer. Maybe you don't, but I've been, it's just an interesting phenomenon. When I go to these as somebody who has not protested my whole life, I find them very buoying from people who just, it was very cold in DC too. And all these people were out just with American flags. The organizers were there handing out American flags and the signs are all homemade and it's just a bunch of people. People clearly like being together. But I find them very heartwarming.
Yeah. I mean, this conversation was going on for a year. I mean, like I had it every week basically with Cameron on FY Pod and it was like, he was the right person to talk to about this, having organized a big youth protest. And there are a bunch of theories, right? Like part of it is the Trump has been around and it's the water they swim in, to use your phrase, Sarah. And so it's like not really a protesting thing. Part of it is, you know, the phones and the social media stuff. Part of it is that the Democrats haven't really galvanized them. Like the right message hasn't really come from No Kings people to galvanize them for whatever reason. I don't really know what, and there were some young people there. It's not as if there were none, you know, and another thing that Cameron had mentioned a lot is just like, they also, the older cohort of Gen Z, if you will, you know, has been protesting their whole life. Like, we fucking protested Parkland. We protested Trump won. We protested Muslim. And it's like, then Trump got elected again. And it's like, we're kind of tired of protesting. You know what I mean? Like, and I do think there's maybe a little bit of that. Like, we haven't seen, you know, that, so obviously, you know, as an old person, you could be like, well, you should be more patient about, you know, change doesn't happen immediately. But it's just like, I've been protesting since I was 14 and things have only got worse and Trump just got elected the second time. And it's just like, okay, I'm going to find something else to do with my afternoon. I do think that is like not a crazy mindset.
Really? Is that true? Because I got to say, the fact that it's getting worse and the fact that there was so much energy in the campus protests that seems to have evaporated, I don't understand, actually. I think that the whole point of being young and idealistic is that you're supposed to, you know, think that the world can get better. They have the most time.
They were told that the campus protests helped elect Trump.
Yeah. I feel like there is a little... Also, I just feel like there's just generational. This is a little bit of an old guy thing, I think. When we were growing up, it was younger. I didn't go to protests. So I don't know. Part of this is like stereotypically, you do think about protests as a young person's thing, right? Like historically, like civil rights protests and the hippies, you know, if you go back to the boomers in the 60s and then like fast forward. It doesn't always have to. You know, that doesn't mean that it always has to be so. I don't know. Look, I think that there is a obligation to try to figure out how to engage those young people. Like my natural instinct is to like scream and be like, why in the fuck isn't everybody out? Why? This is so crazy. This is so bad. Where is everybody? But I just am just accepting that like I'm missing something. And it really truly is incumbent upon like leaders of some kind to galvanize people. And I think that we should look internally at like, why is it that like the Democrats and the pro-democracy movement is not galvanizing young people at the degree that they should be? There has to be a reason for it, right?
What do we want? Norms. When do we want them? In the fullness of time. I can't imagine why people aren't excited for the pitch that I have and my view of what liberal democracy should be all about.
So I don't know. And I do think it does seem at least that like some ground has been gained in, if you look in the numbers, like the Gen Z polls of Trump are awful.
Horrible.
Right. So like the flirtation with him is gone. The energy remains not there. And some people are going to really blanch at this. And I'm sorry because I used to be a fucking Republican and I voted for and publicly passionately advocated for all three of Hillary and Biden and Kamala. But in the same way that the young cohort has grown up in Trump, they've grown up where the opposition party has been led by people that were not specifically galvanizing to them, maybe in the way that they should have been, with the exception of like women, first woman candidate, young women, and young women are the ones that are the most Democratic. So I don't know.
AOC Platner, 2028.
When I first heard the words, you have lung cancer, I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer. It's a diagnosis that changes everything. And yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Allergy season always has a way of sneaking up on you. One minute you're listening to your favorite podcast, the next it's nonstop sneezing and a runny nose. That's why it's essential to keep Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues on hand. They're silky soft for up to 100% irritation-free skin and allergist approved. So when allergies hit, and they will, be ready with Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues. For whatever happens next, grab Kleenex.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. 1 in 4 honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Okay, so I'm kidding about the Plattner part. So very quickly, would either of you like to dunk on Matt Schlapp and CPAC, or
yes,
are you too good for that? And
I'm not
you,
too good for
you're
it.
On the high road because you're thinking to yourself, it's Holy Week. It's really, you know, we're coming up on the Holy Thursday, and I really, this is a moment for growth and grace, and not to dunk on Matt Schlapp.
I don't even need it as a dunk. I think it's it's relevant to the analysis where I do. First of all, Turning Point USA has stolen all of CPAC's juice. Like the entire right wing is now wrapped up in like the conspiracy back and forth around Candace Owen and Charlie Kirk and Erica Kirk and all of this stuff. And like, that's where the young people are. There was nobody at CPAC. CPAC's over. It's done. And part of it is that Matt Schlapp is, everybody knows this guy has been accused of sexually assaulting men. And so he can go on stage with his wife as much as he, sure. I'm saying he was accused. He wasn't allegedly accused. He was actually accused. Whether he's allegedly guilty of it, but he was actually accused multiple times. And so the fact that he has tried to continue to run that organization as though, you know, and be like this big Trump ally, I just don't think anyone's showing up for him. I think
he's creepy and weird.
He's creepy and weird. He's old. And like, also nobody, none of the people that show up at Turning Point USA rallies came to CPAC. It was full of D-lister Republicans. Like Brendan Carr was maybe the most well-known person there. And he just went on there to talk about how Trump actively destroying the First Amendment is Trump winning, and him placing his hand-picked apparatchiks to control CBS and get rid of, it was like this insane thing about sleepy-eyed Chuck Todd and Joy Reid and all of these. And it was like, I cannot believe we are hearing the FCC chairman say this at CPAC, but that was the only notable thing. The rest of it was just cringe. Like Matt Schlapp was on stage being like, do we want to see impeachments? And everyone was like, yeah. And he was like, wait, that's the wrong answer. We don't want to impeach Trump. And so either they were too stupid or they don't like Trump. I do think what we are starting to see, and this goes back to the conversation around how durable his base is, young people are bored with Trump. Like they are ready to move on in their politics, I think, in general. Like a lot of things are changing, and a lot of them for the worse. You listen to young people, like there's a lot of negative strains across both sides of things, generationally that are changing. But
that guy's got some interesting ideas, right?
I mean, the people who are coming up as the leaders now are very unsavory characters. But CPAC, the celebration of CPAC's dying is a little bit, I don't know exactly what the metaphor would be, but it's like something that was really bad. You're like, oh, but when that goes, the thing that's replacing it is even worse.
Yeah, probably true. Can you imagine getting hugged by Matt Schlapp? I mean, it's got to be the most unappealing touch in all of North America. I also think, though, this ties to our other convo about the young people being bored with Trump. And I'm going to continue to bang the drum on this for like a year. I do think there is an opportunity for some fresh blood person to emerge and galvanize a lot of people. I really do. I don't believe that like Gen Z is like hopelessly cynical and like the only path towards them is the Nick Fuentes path. And I think that there's going to be an appeal, obviously, to Nick Fuentes. Nick Fuentes was making fun of Tucker for being an anti-Semite the other day. Like he's ironic. He's terrible, but he's like funny and ironic and whatever. And it's like, there has to be somebody that has the ability to connect the way that Zoe Ron has, to be honest, through like social media and reach people. I that's doable. That is not an undoable thing for the anti-MAGA right. Like they're ripe for the taking.
I hope it's not somebody terrible.
Me too.
That's all my worry is that the personality it takes to connect in that way with people turns out to be awful. And like Zoran, like, you know, his politics are not my politics, But at least Zohran is not like, you don't look at him and be like, oh God, that guy's incredibly toxic, right? Same thing with AOC. Actually, AOC's politics are much closer to my politics. But like, you know, AOC is a, she's a grown up. She's not a toxic human being. Like you look at her and be like, okay, if that's where left populism goes, that's okay. That's good. We can live with that. You could maybe see some other directions that it might go that would be less good.
Yeah. I like the Hassan discourse that was started today. Sorry. I don't know if you'd jump in on this, but like, we could do another hour long podcast. We would make it all about Israel. Me and Sarah did a long Israel thing a couple weeks ago. So I'll just say that like the Hassan side of politics has been benefited by Israel's own actions lately. And you know, whether that be Lebanon or the death penalty rules or getting us into this war or whatever. Like that said, there was a tweet, I just want to pull this up, and it was about, there's a primary in California 11, San Francisco House District. Scott Wiener is one of the candidates, gay guy, state legislator. And then the other leading candidate is, AOC's chief of staff. I'm going to butcher his name, Saikat. Anyway, Hassan is for the AOC chief of staff guy. But he posts this. He says, Nancy Pelosi's seat can go to the anti-Zionist former AOC chief of staff, will be a strong defender of class first politics, or a dude who visited Israel after October 7th and defended a Zionist censorship bill who now claims that he's an Israel skeptic sheepishly. I read that post again. I was like, that's the problem with him? He visited Israel after October 7th? Like, Israel had a terrorist attack against them. And like the guy visited. If you want to say you don't want to support a House candidate that's going to support arms for Israel or a specific policy critique of our relationship with Israel, I'm very open to reformatting our relationship with Israel in a variety of ways. If your critique is that somebody visited Israel after October 7th, it's hard not to see that as anything other than just overt anti-Semitism.
Sure, but you've also got all his previous comments that are also deeply anti-Semitic. Like, and that this is going to be the problem. So this is always it, right? You can't beat something with nothing. And so if the only people who are going to talk about Israel clearly and sort of forthrightly are the anti-Semites, you've got a problem. Like, you have to have people who are going to, sorry to keep talking about my book, but this is, the premise is really about how you have to feed the beast. You have to feed the things the human being wants, right? And that goes to communications, it goes to policy. How do you do it for the good? How do you do it in a way that is not destructive, that is not predicated on hating a class of people or a group of people? Because the conflict merchants are upon us in so many ways that are meant to divide, that are meant to dehumanize certain categories of people. And that instinct is in everybody to sort of do that. And so people have got to step forward. I don't care about, maybe it's a fresh face, maybe it's people that are existing, but like, you cannot be afraid to get into the field and define a place where you are feeding the good parts, meaning, I think, real skepticism of American foreign policy and the way that it is linked to Israel and the way that it has pulled us into this war. And by the way, I don't want to say pulled us in, because Trump has complete agency. Like, Trump had agency. He made this decision, but we are obviously doing it in part because Bibi knew he could manipulate Trump into doing it, because that's Trump. And so, like, people have got to be able to talk about this forthrightly and do it in a way, not just do it in a way. Like, you can tell which people are anti-Semitic and using it as a way, as a cudgel for their anti-Semitism, versus people who are able to criticize Israel in a way that is straightforward and real, but that is not steeped in anti-Semitism.
But is passionate and care about it. You know, care about this stuff with passion. I feel this way about Israel, but I guess I understand why some people are excited about some of the ones that dabble that are you know, have more of the problematic other statements on Israel, because they want somebody whose passion about what is happening to people is commensurate with the actions. You know, and if you're a person that has been consuming a lot of and seeing everything that happened in Gaza and seeing what's happening in the West Bank right now, and you're mad about it, you want a politician that's going to be fucking mad about it. And I feel that way right now about the war in Iran totally, and about the Trump and the DHS shutdown and the immigration regime. Like, I'm fucking mad. Like, so I can connect with them. I want a Democrat that's mad about that stuff. And if the only ones that are showing passion are like going to be the ones that are out on the fringes. Like, that's a problem. That's a problem. You know, I mean, I think that like, that's why I keep mentioning Ruben lately, because at least Ruben, you can tell that Ruben Gallego is fucking pissed about this war. Like, he served in the war and he's fucking pissed about it. It's stupid. Like, you can just tell, like, by seeing his interviews and looking at his tweets, that he's like, I don't want other guys going to serve in stupid wars in the Middle East. Like, I had to. This is a waste. This is dumb. This is irresponsible. He's mad. And it, like, it is a little frustrating that there's so few people that are like expressing that anger across a wide range of things. Like, and the Israel issue is one of them.
Well, it's because they're overly studious about it, right? They are so afraid of putting a foot wrong one way or the other. And this is where so much of my advice boils down to: say what you think. Say what you think and come what may. Like, if you are mad about this war, and if you think that there are ways in which our relationship with Israel is becoming, it's not what it was 20 years ago. Bibi Netanyahu is not the leadership of 20 years ago. Like, it's okay to talk about that.
Actually, he is.
17.
Well, sorry. 17 yeah. Now.
No, the point is, he's been in power for so long. Yeah.
I thought I got outside him with 20 years, but even
you did by 3 years. Yeah, I think he's in year 17.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer. It's a diagnosis that changes everything, and yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Allergy season always has a way of sneaking up on you. One minute you're listening to your favorite podcast, the next it's nonstop sneezing and a runny nose. That's why it's essential to keep Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues on hand. They're silky soft for up to 100% irritation-free skin and allergist approved. So when allergies hit, and they will, be ready with Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues. For whatever happens next, grab Kleenex.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers, but here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. One in four honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
It would be helpful to the discourse if Israel and the current government of Israel stopped acting in such a way as to validate some of the most strident criticisms of the state of Israel. And we can come back to that later.
Yeah, but I want to be able. Okay, sorry.
Go ahead. No,
I just like
ahead.
I want to be able to. I want somebody who's able to speak with authority about the horrors of October 7th, who doesn't sympathize with Hamas or say that the Hamas flag, or was it? It wasn't the Hamas flag that Hassan, I saw him cheering on. It was like Hezbollah. Like, I don't want that. That I don't think that's. I don't think that's in bounds. Like, I don't think people should be following that. I think that is leading people to a bad place. Nick Fuentes and his like sly comedy routine that also includes a little light Holocaust denialism is not what you want. Where is not like there has to be people who are speaking in the affirmative in a way that holds more nuance and has has all human beings at the center of what they want, that cares about people and cares about Americans and like our role in the world, and can talk about that. And I feel like the problem is that in absence of that, people go to these darker people for the part that they like, and that drags them further into the radicalization.
Well, I mean, the good news is, if recent American history is any guide, people will respond to nuance and serious substantiveness and not be pulled out by flashy, insane things being spat by the worst populists. All right, last bit before we get out of here. You guys choose. Do we do the Trump library renderings, which I am now knee deep in on because I just did a little thing with that, or Usha Vance and J.D. Vance's new book on converting to Catholicism?
I feel much more passionately about J.D. than I do about the library.
All right, let's do it. J.D. Vance, Converting to Catholicism, new book coming out. If I was going to promise you that there is one book this year that I will not read and that you could not pay me enough to read, this is it. Won't do it. Sorry.
It is.
Are you going to hate read it, Tim?
I might have to. Because it is so, like, it is the most phony thing. And, like, this is the fundamental thing about JD that I don't, because on the one hand, people say, like, Trump is also very phony, but he's a really successful con man, right? And so he conned people over. And but underneath Trump's phoniness, like, there is some like lizard level of authenticity, right? Where it's like, you even think that, like, when that Trump at his core, you can identify it, right? It is megalomania. It is wanting, you know, adulation and fame.
Hot blonde on my arm and a big tower with my name on it,
right? Like, you sort of know the type, like, of person that is. Like, JD doesn't have that at his core. Like, he has changed his name several times. He has changed his political ideology several times. And now he's changed his religion. And in this book where he changes his religion, we haven't seen it yet, but you look at the cover and it's this like picture of Protestant Appalachia, like WASP Appalachia. It doesn't look Catholic. It's not. He said he is trying to say, I'm converting to traditional Catholicism and I believe in the Pope and all this. And like, meanwhile,
he didn't like his Pope all that much.
Yeah. Meanwhile, he doesn't like the current Pope. He doesn't like the last two popes. It's like, what did you convert to? Like, if you just want this like aesthetic Americana Christianity with like a dollop of Catholicism on top, like, that ain't it. Like, I don't know. And I just think that I can, as a cradle Catholic, I can just look at what he's offering and the words that he says. Like, he uses words that Catholics don't use. You know, we're not big on Bible scripture references.
There's a joke about this, Tim, right? There's a famous internet joke about this.
There is. Which
is like, you know, every cradle Catholic I've ever met.
Yeah.
In the line. Right. Do you have it in front of you?
I have the second part of it in front of me. The first part was like, every cradle Catholic I ever met, like, just, you know, believes that it's about doing good works for other people and caring about other people. And every convert I met believes that they wants to tell you that they just read the Archon of Constantinople's epistle on the Pentecostine rites of the Eucharist and why that means that we can do mass deportations or something. I only have that part of it up.
Right. But that thing is so real.
Yeah.
It's so real.
And it's just like, you don't sound like a Catholic. Like, the book doesn't look like a Catholic book. The church isn't a Catholic church in the picture. And you don't like the Pope. You don't like the last Pope. You don't believe in the teachings of the church when it comes to the inconvenient parts.
This Pope keeps explicitly rebuking you.
Yeah. And then you signed on to be the wingman, like, during this faith journey that you're supposedly on, where you're coming home to faith. You sign on to be the wingman for somebody that, like, is a human encapsulation of all of the deadly sins. You know, that, like, does not open his mouth without telling a lie. And, like, you have to be his front man and an apologist for everything that he does. And you have to implement.
He doesn't have to pee. He chose to be. He auditioned hard to be.
And it's like, you did this while you're on your faith journey? It's like, give me one or the other, okay? Like, it'd be one thing if you're like, 20 years ago, I had a Saul to Damascus moment, and I became a Catholic, and blah, 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 and then now I went into my career, and I'm talking, okay. Or like, I had this political awakening where I saw the only way for America to be saved is for white nationalism and strong borders and isolationism and crony capitalism, Trump style, right? Like either one of those things I would be against, but whatever, like they're coherent. Like this idea that you went on this journey to find pure Catholic faith while you also simultaneously went on this journey to be the top apostle of Trumpism is fucking preposterous and enraging. And I really hope it can't work. I hope it's like too phony. I hope it's beyond the bounds of acceptable phoniness.
Tim, what if it becomes so transparently phony that people in an archway accept it as being so phony? Like this, you can see a way in which it becomes almost camp. And so people decide like, yeah, haha, that JD, this is like the worst of all worlds, I think.
He could do, I don't know if he's camp enough to do camp, but I worry about it. Yeah, that's possible.
It could happen.
If you want to read a book by JD Vance, and I'm sure you don't, but I would not read this new one because there's going to be nothing in it that's useful. Go back and read Hillbilly Elegy. You know, when you write a book, Tim, I don't know if you did this. No, I don't. Did you have a companion book when you were writing your book?
Just for the formatting, you mean?
Something you read that was kind of like in your head as you were kind of bouncing off.
Yeah, I had a couple of them. Losers by Michael Lewis. This Town by Leibovitz. And weirdly, what was the Anthony Bourdain book?
Kitchen Confidential.
Yeah, Kitchen Confidential. I was just using it for like chapter organization style. Those were the ones. Yeah. Was yours J.D. Vance's book?
So I had never read Hillbilly Elegy, and I read it for the first time. And JVL knows this because it's in the book. Not that I read it, but I was talking so much about how I grew up, right? I grew up in a very small town in central Pennsylvania, but it wasn't the way J.D. Vance grew up. But I was curious as I was talking about my own upbringing, because part of what I'm talking about is where cultural conservatism kind of comes from, how you get born into it in some ways. And the way that I grew up kind of just, I was culturally Methodist, but I was like culturally Christian. You know, there's just these ways. Yeah. And so I was interested in how and it was very different in terms of what he was, where I grew up, even though it was a small town, central Pennsylvania, not that far from kind of the holler that he was talking about. They're sort of like geographically adjacent. They're very different upbringings, but in reading it, the thing that is striking is how J.D. Vance is like a different human. Like, it's like reading a book. Now, when you read it, knowing J.D. Vance of now, it is a wild ride to just see who this guy, his origin story, and how detached he is now from the points he was making in that book.
Counterpoint, I love that. When I read Hillbilly Elegy, when it first came out, I said, this is a crock of shit. This guy is on the make. None of this is real. He isn't this person.
Okay, but even then, that is still telling, though. Right.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a different fake persona. And the point of that book is to say the welfare queens are coming from inside the Republican Party. It is the point of that book is look at all these people who basically the populist Trumpers, like look why Trump happened is because these people
to help his career
are
at that point.
Steeped in their grievance. It is a deeply interesting read in retrospect now.
I'm going to have to hate read it. JVL, I just want to read to you. I'm sorry. This is just Catholic talk for a second.
Okay.
Go ahead. This is the first sentence of the description of the book. Okay. The book's called Communion. Communion is a spiritual exploration of what it means to be a Christian in all the seasons of life. That's not something somebody who is a Catholic would write. We're not fucking Christians. That's not it. We're like, we are in the broader scheme of things. I mean, I'm not anymore, but if you're a cradle Catholic, you don't say Christian. You don't say what it means to be a Christian in all seasons of life. That is the fucking type of thing that you would say
at a mega
if you're a fake wasp. Yeah, you're at a mega church, it's fucking fake. You can't write a book about converting to Catholicism while having all of the aesthetic and verbal tics of evangelical. That's what he wants. He wants the evangelical readers to connect with it, but he doesn't want to be that low class. Like, he doesn't want to go down to being a mega church guy.
Right.
So he wants to be a trad Cath, which has a little bit of a more,
well, you know, more respect pedigree there. Yeah. Let me, because this is what I do. This is what I do. I see into the future. Let me tell you guys what the most insufferable op-ed column of 2026 is going to be. Ross Douthat's piece about J.D. Vance's book. Take it to the bank. Go to Kalshi. And if there's a way to bet that on Kalshi, put the milk money in it. All right, guys, good show. Long show. Incredibly long show. It was great to see you both. Hit like, hit subscribe, follow us on the channel, and go to the Webbies and vote for me so I can get my WWE style championship belt. I need this, Mitch. Don't blackball me. Bye.
Bye.
What is that a reference to?
It's tax season, and by now we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money and refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Life with CIDP can be tough, but the Thrive Team, a specialized squad of experts, helps people living with CIDP make more room in their lives for joy. Watch Rare, Well Done.
An all-new reality series, Rare, Well Done, offers help and hope to people across the country who live with the rare disease CIDP. Watch the latest episode now, exclusively on RareWellDone.com.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.